This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, here with the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. And let me say for myself, not anyone else, that Michigan State has the softest fan base in America. Mentally soft. Like Charmin.
Well, you're not even going to make them search for it, Sam. Like, they're going to bring this thing out of me right there.
Not that constipated bowel movement like we see Tom Izzo must be having from time to time. Mark D'Antonio before him. No, the soft, mushy kind. That's Michigan State's fan base after the flood of responses to last week's roundtable. I didn't know so many Sparties listened to us, guys. How you doing today? I didn't speak for any of you. I was just speaking for me.
Well, speaking for me because I caused it, I guess. I don't get it because we were talking positively about Michigan State. We were talking about the playmakers they have, And, yeah, do I listen to Michigan State shows only if they cut all my fingers off first or threaten to? So why they would listen to us, I have no idea. But, you know, it was not an insulting conversation. And so that they got worked up over that is really quite remarkable. This has to be us, just a few people. It couldn't be more than one or two
feed,
people.
No, it was more than a few. I looked up at my feed and they were giving me stats for Kenneth Walker. And I'm like, why are random people putting Kenneth Walker stats on my
There was a whole thread on your message board, Sam, and people were like telling about their Sparty friends texting them after the show. So, wow. Yeah, Craig, you started something that was a lot of fun, actually. A lot of fun.
Well, good.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it at all. But, fellas, there's a game to talk about here in Ann Arbor. Michigan taking on Northwestern. Not the Northwestern that we thought they would be, Brian Cook, but a Northwestern that is coming off a victory over Rutgers. So what do you make of these Wildcats?
They're terrible.
Yeah. And speak for yourself as far as like what we thought they would be, sir, because I mean, pick up your copy of Hail to the Victors and see what we wrote about them. They lost everything, especially on defense, including their defensive coordinator.
You thought they would be this bad though? I mean,
I knew they were good. We thought they were going to be pretty bad on defense. You know, they lost Hankowitz too. Like they don't even have like the thing that we always trusted them to make them good on defense. They lost so many players. They're starting walk-ons all over the place. They're disorganized. God, their middle linebackers are terrible. And they're like I think they're changing the starters up this game too, because I looked at they have new starters on there and they have oars all over their depth chart. If you have a lot of oars on your depth chart, that's a bad sign.
Brian, but I guess, blame me. I thought that there was a Pat Fitzgerald factor that would always prevent them from looking as bad as they've looked this year. Maybe they would be worse than normal. Or they wouldn't be as good as normal, but they wouldn't be this bad. This doesn't seem like a Pat Fitzgerald team.
Yeah, I don't know if like COVID and then the transfer portal has really hurt them more, because like I think Northwestern is probably a place like Michigan where it's pretty hard to get transfers in.
Yeah.
So. But it's just as easy to lose guys. So if they're not able to recruit very well, and they historically haven't, and if they're losing guys, I mean, and then, you know, you start the court, you have three different quarterbacks who have taken snaps, and the one who looked halfway decent only lasted 16 throws before he got hurt. So they're on quarterback number three here. They have not been able to rush the ball over the past, you know, 2-3 years. And then they did lose everything on defense, and that's not a program that just reloads, right? Now, I didn't think they were going to be 450 rushing yards to Nebraska bad, but like, you know, this program over the past decade has been able to, you know, get into strangulation fights against teams, go to overtime, win all their overtime games, and that's where their success has come from. And if they don't have a defense that is capable of holding people to under 20 points, then they're just not going to be successful.
Well, I have some questions for Brian and Seth on this point. Is that, yeah, coming off Nebraska, they looked just dreadful. They gave up 660 yards and 450 on the ground. You're right. But their defense came alive last week. Now, yeah, it was Rutgers, but they did hold them to 220 yards, and they did put 400 yards up, and Holinsky threw for 267. So what happened last week? Because they looked actually sort of like a football team. It looked sort of more historical Northwestern last week than they have.
So I have an answer for this. Rutgers is a very simple offense. There's not a whole lot of things that they can do. They want to stretch it out to the receivers and their best, it was just a good matchup because, like, the only good player on Northwestern's defense, the only decent player on Northwestern's defense is Brandon Joseph, that safety. And the way that Rutgers attacks you, they're attacking your safety. The way Nebraska attacks you is they mess with your linebackers. We just saw it, right? We just saw what they did to poor Josh Ross, okay? And Northwestern's linebackers are terrible, especially the middle linebackers. They keep on moving out between Bryce Gallagher and Khalid Jones. Neither one of them are young guys, so they're not going to get any good. Bryce Gallagher is not Blake Gallagher, who was the good linebacker they had last year. I think it's his little brother,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And Chris Bergen is their Sam, who's supposed to be kind of like a walkout Sam, but he's just more weight well into the linebacker zone, and he.
I don't really think we need a detailed rundown personnel.
But my point is, what Nebraska does to you really attacked. Exactly what Northwestern is bad at. The way Rutgers attacks, they don't have a lot of choices about how they attack, right? They're going to throw it out to the receivers and go. And that plays into what Northwestern is best at. And
if you watch the Michigan State game, I don't really know about that. So, because, like, they did have a bye week. They did get to, like, regroup a little bit. And, you know, what was Rutgers doing against us? They were running one thing.
Right.
So, if that's still what they're doing, then that's pretty easy to get a handle on and scout and go after. So
that's my point.
I think, yeah. I mean, I just don't think we needed to run down another two deep.
are they? I think it was the question from fans is this the sign of what we see from Rutgers? I mean, what we see from Northwestern in most years that all of a sudden they can look bad. For the good part, not as bad as they've looked this year, but they can look bad for the first portion of the season. Then they turn it on. The Pat Fitzgerald effect takes hold, and somehow, some way, they play better in the second half. Sounds like this was just a matchup with Rutgers, though.
Well, I mean, I think that there's probably some of both, right? Like, no matter what the matchup is, holding someone to 63 yards rushing is pretty good, even if it's Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers did better than that against us. So I think that there is some hope for Northwestern that might not be completely dire, but... You know, they gave up 6 yards a carry to Ohio, like, not state, just Ohio. So,
and Ohio's bad even by MAC standards,
right? So I feel like there's just some stuff that you can't fix in a bye week, and the Northwestern's got a lot of that stuff.
I think each got to be clever. I think that if you're running stuff that, like, Nebraska, their offense is clever, and if you throw those linebackers into any kind of confusion or, like, throw them into any kind of play action or anything like that, they're gone. Like, they can't do more than one thing. And as Brian said, Rutgers does one thing. So it's easy to key on that and easy to prepare for that. Anyone who did anything clever, and I include Michigan State in this, unfortunately, is just going to wreck them.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly more compelling matchups elsewhere around the Big Ten. And the one last week that at least came as a surprise to us, I don't know what you guys thought was going to happen in the Iowa-Purdue game. But, man, I did think Iowa was overrated at number two. I did not think they were going to drop one to Purdue, though. And David Bell had a game. But as I've been saying all week, the guy that Michigan missed out on, the bigger loss than Zach Harrison, George Karlaftis, is around present and doing his thing. I think he's out of there after this year. But what did you make of that game?
Well, Karlaftis, Michigan recruited him as hard as they could. Yeah, it wasn't like he was a guy that the staff didn't know about or didn't want. No, they wanted him as much as anybody, from my understanding. He's from West Lafayette, and that's where his heart was, and that's where he stayed. And so that, you know, the guy on that team who's also good is the linebacker, and I think he's from Detroit, and a guy Michigan didn't recruit very hard, a guy named Grant. Is that his name? Marvin Grant, something like that.
He went to King, and Michigan was briefly involved, and then kind of.
They made a mistake on him.
Safety. He was a safety in high school. That's the thing.
Okay, well, yeah, but they misevaluated him, in my opinion, because I think he's a really good player. We're not making that mistake again.
We're recruiting all sorts of safeties for linebacker now.
So anyway, but I'm sorry. I got out of your lane, Sam. I just talked about Karlaftis.
So now Iowa is down, no longer the obvious choice to win the West. So who do you look at over there now? Can Purdue win this thing? Do you think Wisconsin rises back up and wins the West? Who's that team on the other side, suddenly thrown in disarray?
Well, last week I predicted that Wisconsin would win the division.
That was you. Okay.
Yeah, and I still think they're going to win the division. Now, they have Iowa at home. They have Nebraska at home. They do have to play, I think, Purdue this week on the road, which will be a fascinating game. I think Wisconsin will win that game, and I think they're going to still win the West Division, even though one of their good fans who emails me every week, Badger Ken, curses his team out. On a weekly basis. So.
I don't know. I still have Iowa. I don't know how Wisconsin's going to score 2 points against the Iowa defense. So Iowa finishes with Wisconsin, Northwestern, Minnesota, Illinois, and Nebraska.
Yeah.
They've gotten their hard parts done other than Wisconsin.
Have to beat Wisconsin at Madison. And if I'm going to put my money on Wisconsin.
But Wisconsin's going to have more than two losses in the Big Ten, and Iowa's not.
I think they're going to win out. Okay. So, well, that's what.
Why? What? What?
I mean, who cares? This is just Ohio State's sacrifice in the Big Ten championship. Who cares what goes on in the Big Ten West?
Yeah. Let's see how everyone else develops. Certainly, they are the cream. They look to be the cream of the crop right now, for sure. So, no argument from anyone that they are the clear favorite still. I just wonder, is anyone going to be able to play enough offense to help their defense out against the Buckeyes? I think that is ultimately the key. But I want to, unless you guys have any more football that you want to talk about, they got the Madness event coming up on the basketball side of things. And we got into a debate recently talking about the preseason favorite to win the Big Ten. Now, is it homerish to look at Michigan and to say the talent in their rotation, to me, from 1 through 9, probably is better than the talent in the rotation for Purdue, even though Purdue is bringing back Jaden Ivey and Trevion Williams and Zach Edey. They're bringing back their 8 top scorers, Tim McCormick said. What does that really mean when the bottom part of that 8 is not that good anyway? There are some that think that Purdue is the clear favorite. I'm curious where you guys fall in that debate.
No, I don't think they're the clear favorite. I think, there's a top of the Big Ten that's Purdue, Michigan, and Illinois. And Illinois is really depending on a couple of people coming through. And so I would put them like a half step below those two teams. The thing about Purdue is that they do have depth. And I think if you look at Brandon Newman and Sasha Stefanovic, those are guys who are going to shoot 38-40% from three, hugely valuable players. And those are their fourth and fifth guys, if you count Williams and Edey separately. And then I think you're going to get a big move forward from Edey. I think Ivy is in the same boat. The scary thing is that people are saying that Ivy was about a 40% three-point shooter in high school. So if he can get even anywhere near that, if he can crack the low 30s, then he's going to be terrifying.
He's a lottery pick if he can get in the mid to upper 30s. But here's the question for me with Purdue, and I'll just give you my answer already. Can Zach Edey and Trevion Williams play together? I don't think they can.
No, they can't.
I can't.
They can't, but you've got two guys who look like upper echelon Big Ten centers, and having two of those guys at the same time is so valuable, as Michigan learned when they had Mo Wagner and John Teske. So just the ability to play through foul trouble, to keep these guys fresh. I mean, I think having a really good backup center is like if you could tell me I could pick one thing from my bench, that's what I would pick. And, Edie's a guy who he was like the millionth recruit. Like he was like in the 450s. Nobody even knew who he was. And he comes to Purdue and it's like, how are you this advanced? So he had some turnover issues, but he shot 60% from the floor. He drew a ton of fouls and he shoots at the free throw line. So honestly, I'd rather see Trevion Williams because I know what that matchup looks like with Hunter Dickinson. And Hunter Dickinson just owns that matchup, right? Trevion Williams couldn't do anything against him. So
I was wondering if maybe you want to flip that, though, if you want to have Diabate because he can guard Williams wherever he goes. And then use your bigger guy against Edie.
Where does Trevion Williams go? He goes in the paint. Liddell kind of response,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the question. How do you use Diabate against these guys? Because Edie is just a monster.
Well, yeah, you just put him out there against Edie because Edie isn't going to back anyone down. He's just huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like.
And Edie is slow. He's like a Tyrannosaurus.
He's a hockey player. He's got some
agility. He's still slow. Relative to his size, I don't know if I agree with that. But, yeah, I think Purdue's going to be really good. And the thing that kind of tips it to Michigan for me is I like the matchup personally for Michigan between those two teams just because we saw what happened last year with Williams and Hunter Dickinson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the inside matchup is good for Michigan. On the Purdue side, it depends. Well, can they shoot the ball? And last year they had Sasha Stefanovic, and they still have him, but he's a very streak shooter. And if he's the only shooter you got, you can check him.
Well, they have Newman too. So
and Isaiah Thompson can shoot as well.
Yeah, I think they have more shoot. Like for them, it's like, is Ivy going to be able to shoot? Because if not, I mean, Michigan. When they played, you know, he was 0-5 from three. But you know, I just go back to Williams. Williams was 6-19 from the floor, and Michigan didn't double him once, right? So that passing ability he has was neutralized, and it was just like, all right, try to shoot over Hunter, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think Michigan is a lot less. We've already talked about it a little bit, but like it Michigan can like weather teams a lot better. They're a very good defensive team, which I think travels with you a lot easier. And Purdue, as I mentioned, is streakier. So like they're. Purdue's going to have a few games where they're just not falling, right? They go against Michigan State and, like, you know, Trevion Williams is not making his twos or whatever. And that's going to affect them, and they're going to have a few losses that they wouldn't have otherwise, even if they knock some other teams to the floor. And then Michigan, I think, is going to be a lot steadier. You know, they're going to get the same kind of night from them every time you see them.
Well, I think it's worth pointing out that on KenPom, Purdue is the 327th most experienced team last year. And this is a painter team, right? So that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy who has an intricate system, who really prioritizes defense. You know, they go 18-10 with that kind of roster, and they get everybody back. Like, there's a potential that this team could be unrecognizable because they're really good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the program I most admire in the Big Ten after Michigan is Purdue. And I love Matt Painter. I loved, I'm blocking on the predecessor coach. Yeah, no, Gene Keady. And I admire what they do with teams, and their teams get better, and they recruit guys you never heard of, but they somehow become real players. So that's a completely admirable program, in my opinion, and very tough. They're like playing against nails too. So it's, I have to put them as the favorite right now just because you don't really know what Michigan has. Now, Michigan may well be a more talented team, and you know, we may change our mind, or I may change my mind a month into the season. But right now, Michigan is more of an enigma to me in some spots, and Purdue isn't. You know what you have there, and you know it's going to be really good and really well coached and hard as hell to beat. Even though I think Brian's correct, Michigan may well match up very positive way against them.
Yeah, we have to wait and see what the freshman transition is going to be like, right? I mean, you never really know. I don't know, physically they look like they're ready to go. We just heard Phil Martelli say they are ahead of the curve defensively, which I found really revealing and encouraging that they are making. Because John Beilein used to always say, and not that, you know, he was – that defense was necessarily first with John, but still he would always say, man, the guys, they pick up the offense faster than they do defense. And here you have this group really seeming to progress defensively quicker than they have offensively, and they're progressing in both well. But the bigger question is, what do you think of the impact of Devontae Jones? I think that he very well could be the most impactful transfer in the conference. Some people probably going with Xavier Johnson at Indiana. I could see that. He's going to have more usage But man, after him, I mean, who is a bigger factor, a bigger transfer factor than Devontae Jones?
Well, Devontae Jones, a couple of things. One is with Mike Smith, he played in the Ivy League, which was a stronger conference than where Coastal Carolina plays. And you had good tape of Mike Smith against real teams, or at least Division I teams or Power Five teams. They had played Wake, and you had a whole game tape of Mike Smith playing against Wake, and you could see what Michigan had with him. With Devontae Jones, not so much. I think the strongest team they played last year was Pepperdine, perhaps, who was number 94 in KenPom, and he did not have a good game against Pepperdine. Now he was in foul trouble early in that one, and I can't find tape of it. So I don't know. But a couple things I like is one, even though he's 6'1", at media day he said, and I think this is true, he has a wingspan of 6'6 to 6'7. And when asked about, you know, and he was, I think, the leading steal guy in the country last year. If not, he was right near the top. It was some ridiculous number, almost 3 steals a game. And he was asked about using his wingspan and his reach, and he talked about it in a very detailed, thoughtful way about how, no, he can't really reach because he'll get fouls, but talked about how he used his length defensively. I was impressed with him. I was impressed with how he talked. I was impressed with his basketball and other intelligence. But, you know, we don't know. He doesn't have a history, really, of playing at this level. And so we're just going to have to wait and see. The other thing that was interesting to me, the most impressive player to me, you can't watch everyone in just these shooting drills, and was Kobe Bufkin. Uh-huh. And when Kobe was asked what position he plays or will play, he goes, well, they're playing me at the 1 and 2. And yeah. So, you know, and I had sort of viewed him as a 2-3. Well, I think he sort of views himself, and it may be the staff views him as a 1-2. Now, I got down to the gym a little early before anyone else was down there except for Kobe. And he was working on 2 ball drills, and he was killing it. And I don't know if you've ever tried to do these 2 ball drills on ball handling. They're hard as hell. And he was doing it like sleeping. And so I think it's not impossible that you could slide him over to the 1. He is a phenomenal shooter in the warmups, in the practices. He made everything. He was working on floaters, which I hate, but he was making them routinely. He was working on right-handed floaters. He's left-handed. And Kobe reminds me a whole lot of Jalen Rose. He's not quite as tall as Jalen, but he's tall. And he has except I think he's a better shooter and Jalen really didn't have a jump shot. Kobe actually has a jump shot. So I, you know, this whole back
fire on Kobe. That's all I got. You preach.
Oh, really? You agree with me on Kobe?
Absolutely. And yeah. Starting to get some converts because Tim actually said, lot of respect. I think Caleb Houston is going to be a really good player. I think Musa Diabate is going to be a really good player.
Musa, huh?
He came back and he's like, I think there's a good chance that Kobe Bufkin, when all is said and done, could be the best player in this group.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who the best player in the group is going to be because there's some remarkable talent. I know who the fan favorite may be.
Yeah, guess on the
no. No, Will Cheddar. Will Cheddar is going to be the fan favorite because he looks like George Mikan. He looks like a cross between George Mikan and the guy can shoot the damn ball. And so you know, now that
hey, can we go back to to Devontae Jones for a second?
Sure.
So yeah, he played at Coastal and he didn't get a whole lot of high major competition at Coastal, but he entered the NBA draft and there was a G League elite camp that he went to. And after that elite camp, Jonathan Givony of ESPN put him on the fringe of the second round.
Oh wow!
Said he was a great defender. Said he was one of the most impressive players there. So
he was the best defender there, didn't they?
Yeah. So
like, that's
so like Yeah, I understand that he hasn't played at a high major level, but he went there and he did not look out of place with guys like Jalen Wilson and Kofi Coburn, right? Like, he looked like he belonged on that tier of near NBA players. So I think that, you know, no disrespect to Mike Smith, but Mike Smith was not at that level. And I think that Michigan might actually have
a better player than Mike Smith,
a significantly better player, because he's a lot bigger. You know, that he's shot bigger. Is a set shot. It's a little broke. That's my main question there. But his floater is A+. So he's going to be able to translate that. Like, he was averaging a point per possession on floaters, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's
so he's a guy who I think is going to translate. And I have more confidence in him translating than Smith, just because I think we have more evidence that he's a high level player than Smith Smith.
Well, that if that's true, and I sure hope it is, then, you know, Michigan's got to sort through their backcourt and, you know, and in a serious and perhaps difficult way, because you're not going to keep Kobe Bufkin on the bench this year. That's for sure. I mean, he's going to get some minutes someplace.
Yeah, he's not going to get 40 minutes, though. I mean,
no one's getting 40.
What struck me in looking at Kobe, I know he can shoot it. I know he can handle it. And they've been talking about him being a 1-2 from his recruitment on. That has been the plan all along. What surprised me is, man, he has put in work physically. That dude was a beanpole. Yeah. A couple of years ago, and he has definition now. That was the missing link. Like, if he's physically ready to play, oh my God. And so I think he is going to be a real contributor this year. And then next year, he's a guy. It, to me, before, it was a 3-4 year track. Now it's a 2-3 year track for Kobe, with just how he's looking and what they're saying about him. In practice. And I got to make a mention. I mentioned Xavier Johnson maybe being the only guy that could be a better transfer. I guess we have to mention Wahab from Maryland, but I just put the Turgeon factor in there, Ira, and I say that downgrades anything that happens down there in college.
Hold on, Sam, you nailed it.
So anyway, listen, we need to get to a break. We need to come back. When we come back, we're going to talk some Michigan hockey now, the number one team in the country. And then I put a little space between us talking about Michigan State. We did that at the beginning, took some shots, and then we can come back
around. You took some shots. The rest of us are not part of this.
Yeah, not you. Yeah, me. I took some shots. And so we put some space between that and talk about them being a minor league for coaches for better programs. We can talk about that a little bit down the line. With maybe Mel Tucker being on his way out the door, going to LSU. We can talk about that when we come back on the other side. In the meantime,
question is, how does Michigan State always end up with football coaches who look like their prior job was sergeant at arms for the Stasi? I mean, those guys always look so angry and so mean. I mean, I like Mel Tucker. So.
That's like a lot of football coaches, though. That's not.
Funny. Yeah, yeah. You're taking it from a pool of sergeant. if these guys were not football coaches, they would absolutely be in the military or they'd be cops.
But I mean, have there ever been three less humorless people than, say, D'Antonio, Mel Tucker, and Bobby Williams? And, you know,
Williams.
I remember Bobby Williams. He was always mad. He looked like he was always ready to bite the head off of.
He had a tough role there. I've seen Bobby Williams at like various things now, because he comes up here and recruits for Bama and whatnot. And and yeah, he's a pretty happy guy when he's not responsible for Michigan State football.
So where did you get? So let this Ira put up cotton candy. Hour. Where did you get the cotton candy yards, Craig? Where did that come from? What was the inspiration behind it?
It just popped in my head.
You said that before. No. I pointed out. You said that before about NIU. That, like, you know, it was the preview to NIU. I went back and found it. You used that phrase to talk about, like, Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins, like, getting a bunch of cotton candy yards against NIU.
I don't remember ever saying
candy
it
yards. I think you just said candy yards, but I think you used that phrase before.
I don't remember ever saying it. Maybe I did. It just struck me that, you know, I've watched all the Michigan State games, and while I think he's a really good back, I mean, I'm not you know, he's an NFL guy. I think he's a really good back. I also felt that a lot of it was empty yards against really bad teams like Youngstown State. He put, you know, and
I think he's a really good back. I think Blake Corum's better.
I don't know who's better. I think they're both really good. But you know, Blake Corum, a lot of these yards were pretty empty. So
yeah, Blake Corum's usage is diluted a bit, obviously, with Hassan Haskins.
Yeah, because Michigan's got Haskins. And yeah, if Corum was the only back for Michigan, his stats would, you know, would be obviously much more inflated. So, but
I mean, Pro Football Focus has their opinion back is better, and I'm sure the NFL draft is going to have PFF has Blake Corum the best running back in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so who has Blake Corum as the best back in the country? Can you repeat that?
Pro Football Focus.
So not me. I didn't even say best back in the country. Pro Football Focus.
This was, yeah, I didn't check in this week because we had a bye, so I wasn't looking at the numbers again, but I can check right now and see who is RB1. Oh, yeah, it's still Blake Corum. Blake Corum, Bijan Robinson, Treshawn Ward. I'm scrolling. I still, look, there's Trevion Henderson. Number 14 is Hassan Haskins. Still scrolling. God, I don't see MSU any. Wait, I have to go to the next page. I have to expand to 50. I only had 50 guys on this page. Let's see. Top 100.
So they don't have him in the top 50? Come on.
I'm not finding him here. Oh, but no, I'm kidding. He's number 8. I missed him. Okay. Number 8, Kenneth Walker. So they have him 8. They have Hassan Haskins, number 14. They have Trevion Henderson, number 13. Number 12 is Zach Charbonnet. So, I mean, he's doing okay. So I still think Haskins over him. But
Pure impact homers at Pro Football Focus, by the way. That's that they're the only ones that think that Blake Corum is
number
the best
8 running back in the country is really good. Kenneth Walker is really, really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're supposed to get a lot of yards against bad teams. If you play YSU and you get 2.6 yards a carry, that's a problem, right? So, I mean, he broke a lot of tackles. I just watched the Northwestern Michigan State game again. And, you know, part of my big takeaway from that is the Northwestern linebackers are so terrible because they're just falling at his feet.
And all right, guys, coming back on radio, stand by. Take it to the top, Sam, back in 5, 4, 3.
And we are back on Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. MGO Blog Roundtable. I agree with this. Just real quick before we talk to Michigan hockey. D-Tuck, my man D-Tuck. I don't understand D-Tuck. Said, why are Michigan State fans in the MGO Blog Roundtable segment? Crazy.
Who else are they going to listen to?
That's crazy.
Well, don't they?
Mike Valenti?
Yeah, isn't Mike Valenti
maybe,
the MSU
guy? Maybe
there's some
Michigan State fans with taste and discernment. And they're like, this slop that I'm being fed because I'm a Spartan fan is garbage. I'm going to get some culture. I'm going to learn about the Russian Revolution with Craig Ross. I know I didn't learn anything in college, but maybe I could learn something on sports talk radio.
Oh, yeah, we got parties in the building.
Yeah, I mean, Seth and I still have at least an hour to talk about Rudolph Virchow.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that'll be riveting sports talk radio. But actually, it's quite salient to football and so on.
Well, high-rated teams seems to be the norm right now at the University of Michigan. None more highly rated than the hockey program, which is now the number one team in the country after they beat number 5 and number 1 in the same weekend. Brian Cook and played from behind in both games. We know they could score, but man, they got some tremendous, tremendous saves between the pipes.
Yeah, and also those games were in Duluth. So virtual road games, little road games for the first one, virtual road game for the second one. And they got kind of, I think, shocked early by Duluth just because that's a very old team, very experienced team. And then they got off the mat, and that's really impressive to me because these guys have probably never experienced an environment like that, a road environment where everybody is baying for blood, playing a really good team, and to be able to weather the storm, thanks in large part to Portillo. Portillo.
Well, that's the Spanish.
I've been doing a lot of Duolingo. So
you've been Seth.
Devin Gardner. Devin can't do a show without calling K. McNamara Shea. So
all right. So
it just goes with the territory.
But Portillo, to give Brian a pass on this, he's learning Spanish.
Yeah,
he's been doing Spanish. So
been doing Spanish anyway. And then their skill just tells, like the goal where Brisson puts it between his legs, like, oh my god, like that is absurd. And then the winner on Saturday, where Bortolo doesn't even seem to be looking at Brisson when he gets that across. And if you get Brendan Brisson a one timer, it's over. It's going top shelf. The goalie doesn't have a chance. Just chalk it up.
Didn't he slide on one knee?
Yes.
And bang one in?
That is some Kyle Connor stuff. Like, Kyle Connor is able to get a one-timer top shelf from any position on the ice, even behind the net. And
I was going to say Brett Hall. That's who it reminded me of.
I mean, in recent Michigan history, it is Kyle Connor that I think is the nearest Brisson comparison right now, because that shot is A+, elite. And they have guys who can get him the puck, and the Bortolo pairing is perfect, because that guy has eyes in the back of his head and knows everything about hockey because his father played in the NHL. His grandfather played in the NHL. His great grandfather existed when the NHL didn't exist, but would have played in the NHL if it did. So, I mean, that pairing is amazing. And then I think you've seen that Michigan does have some of that sandpaper, because people are talking, oh, this team's too young. They're not going to be able to hang with these guys. But, you know, you have York. I mean, not York. You have Pesiov. You have Lambert. You have Van Wy, who scored a shorty. Like, these guys are old. And you have Blankenberg, who's 24, 25, going to get a free agent contract. Like, I think they showed that they have both things. They have a lot of talent, and they have a lot of grit.
And yeah, they have both. I mean, it's second weekend, but that was a question mark, right?
Yeah.
Did Michigan have the good? And he made, I mean, there was the one that Mel talked about where he said, what the hell are you doing? And then he flew across the crease and made a save after being away from the net. But that dude was tremendous. He was outstanding.
Yeah. And he's 6'6". So just by existing, he's going to block off a large part of the net. And I had a few questions about the second game against Lake State. Like, I was like, rebound control is kind of an issue. I still think it's kind of an issue. But he has a lot of assets that he brings, even if he's still working on parts of his game.
Well, and two things. One is, fans have to recognize, perhaps they do, is how good the teams that they played at Duluth. I mean, those are two really good teams. Those are two teams that are going to have a chance to make the Frozen Four. UMD, I think, was rated number 5. Haven't they won 2 of the last 3 national championships?
They have, yes.
And so that's a good program playing in their place. Michigan did have one fan there who posts all the time, I think, on MGO blog, Stephen King. Yeah. I know he was there and is a great fan and a great poster. And, you know, and then Minnesota State the following night is the number one team in the country. And Michigan is down in both these games, 1-0 and 2-1. And yet they never seemed to panic in the slightest, and they just kept playing and playing. And it was clear by the end of the game who the better team was. And in both cases, it was this Michigan team. And, you know, Brian, I know, had some concerns about Portillo. But so far, his save percentage is .929, which is really high and good especially for a team that's more of an offensive team than a defensive team. And I felt like on Saturday night, he outplayed Dryden McKay, who is a great goalie and was considered the best goalie in the country. But if you ask me who was better between those two, I probably lean to Portillo. So I'm not sure that, you know, this weakness or this question about Michigan really, in fact, exists. And, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, Brian, do you know if they've straightened their lines out yet, or they're comfortable with what their lines are? I know that they're going to use Brisson and Bortolo together, and it looks like they were going to stay with Johnson and Beniers and Samuskevich.
I mean, they've been moving guys around a little bit, but
yeah,
they moved Duke down to like the fourth line, which I disagree with. Because I think
they used Pasioff, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that's really going to be like the put up or shut up moment for guys who are scratches when Beecher comes back. So they have a first round pick that hasn't been played yet. And he's almost certainly going to be their third line center. And then who are you flanking him with? Who are you flanking Van Wy with? But it seems like things are pretty much set. Like, you know who your top pairing is on defense. You know who your second pairing is on defense. And I think you have a pretty good idea of the third pairing because Ethan Edwards is going to be the offensive guy. And then you're going to rotate through like Summers and Pearson for the number six D. They seem pretty set. And now it's just about refining things and getting on the power play more than once a game because they're shooting, they're converting at 50 freaking percent. Like,
yeah, actually, and if you count, depending, I guess the NCAA counts majors as two power play chances. Mm-hmm. And so if you count that as one, they're actually 7 of 13. They're above 50%. Now, that's not going to keep going. I think the about the highest all time is around 32%.
Well, they're going to challenge that.
Yeah, which yeah. is the benchmark. I don't think that anyone has ever done better. I think it's like 31.8 or something like that. And that may even be the Montreal Canadiens back when they were in the 70s when they were loaded. So, you know, so to be even for four games, but you're talking about four games, two against high level teams, two against a competent team. And to have,
yeah, you know, for the record, Lake State split with Omaha. Omaha hasn't lost. And then they bombed St. Thomas. Well, St. Thomas is new to D1. It looks pretty terrible. Yeah. And then Bowling Green took an old-style 3 points off of RPI this weekend. So these aren't meatball teams that Michigan beat up on in the first couple of weeks. These teams look like at least average college hockey teams, and Michigan outscored them by a total of 15 goals in three games. So, yeah, the indicators here is that this is real, and I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to the Minnesota series because that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I just want to throw – can I throw something in there real quick?
Sure.
Is that the Michigan's able to play different styles. Like we saw against Lake Superior State in the Bowling Green exhibition too that they were playing like 80s hockey, right? Like let's just go up and down. Like we'll take a couple odd-man rushes in order to get a couple and we're just going to outscore you. And then they kind of changed up their style this weekend in Minnesota where they were playing just like a lot tighter. You know, they were so it's interesting that they can change up how they play depending on who they're matched up against, because you don't see a lot of teams that have the skill to be able to play different styles, right? Like, I don't think they're going to completely Notre Dame it, but they're going to be able to approach every single team how they want to instead of, you know, trying to force their style of hockey on everybody.
Yeah. I mean, MGoBlog is uniquely blessed with two really good hockey writers and Alex Drain and David Nasternak. And David said on the Saturday night game that there was one odd man rush against Michigan, and he wasn't really even sure if he'd consider it an odd man rush. It was sort of a soft 2-on-1 where they shot it wide, but that was it. And so you're right, Seth. I mean, to go a game and the way, you know, the puck bounces in funny ways, and it's, you know, it's unusual not to get some sort of a breakaway or some sort of a major advantage in a game, but Michigan has really limited those this year. And so I think they are playing
when they
more
want
solid
to.
Hockey.
Again, that second Lake Superior State game there, I think they had like nine of them. So I mean, I think it was a difference in style. I think that Michigan presses, has the ability to press sometimes. They've certainly got the defenders, you know, with offensive skill to do that with, right? But they can also sit back if they need to as well.
Yeah, this weekend isn't a sitter. I mean, Western Michigan is a good team. They've been a good program for a while. I think they won their first two games. Does anyone know if that's right? I'm sure they won their first two.
No, they're number 14 in the country. Talked to Mel about it yesterday.
Yeah, and they won their first two games against a decent team, I think, but I'm blocking on it right now. And they're an older team, and so they'll have them Friday night, and then they'll go to Western on Saturday. So, you know, Michigan is starting with really good teams. Incidentally, in the Bowling Green exhibition, which I think Michigan won 7-1, I was sitting near a couple of Bowling Green fans, and they came in and they thought that Bowling Green has a really good team. They said, "We're pretty young, but we really have a good team." And by the middle of the second period, they were just disconsolate. you know, because that was just a demolition.
That means sad for any Michigan State fans that are still listening to this one.
just quickly.
Hey, quick. We only got a couple of minutes left.
All right.
So if LSU comes calling for Mel Tucker, which they might if Urban Meyer somehow, some way survives and decides to stay in Jacksonville, or USC's president, you know, whatever reservation she has about Urban Meyer, she gets overruled and they come and get Urban Meyer. Because if you got to choose between SC and LSU, why would Urban Meyer choose LSU in that mix? He can go out in the Pac-12 and dominate California recruiting. If they come to Mel Tucker, is there any way, any possibility that he would turn that down to stay at Michigan State? What do you guys think?
No. I mean, LSU's a program that got Les Miles and Ed Orgeron national titles. Right? Like you go to LSU. I mean, especially because he's an SEC guy from back in the day. Like, this is not something where it's like Joe Moorhead going to Mississippi State. Like, he knows the culture. He knows what's required of him. And I don't think that there will be any hesitation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rumors out of LSU. I mean, you can't trust much of it. I mean, Jimbo Fisher says he isn't going there. I don't trust that. You know, James Franklin, who knows? He's been rumored there. You've got Urban Meyer being rumored there. I mean, so whether they're going to, you know, reach down for Mel Tucker at this point is uncertain. But if it happens, I mean, Ed Orgeron just got $17.15 million for not coaching. And last time I checked, that's a little better than what I do say at WTKA for coming in. And I actually do prepare for this. That's maybe hard to believe. But, you know, and so if you go to LSU, they're going to double his salary. They're going to give him a massive buyout, and they're going to take care of his assistants. And what they're going to say to Mel Tucker is, you are set for life. You come down here, you know, whether you stay or whether you go, right. You're going to be a rich man for the rest of your life. And that's not something that he's rich at Michigan State, but at LSU, he's really rich.
And you can just talk to Nick Saban, his mentor. Nick said, I don't want to be the stepchild in my own state. Yeah. I don't want to be the also-ran in my backyard.
I mean, don't you want to respond to Michigan State fans who say, look, Harbaugh's making less than Tucker. How come Harbaugh doesn't go to LSU?
Well, first of all, I'll tell you why.
Michigan is not a second-tier program. Great second-tier program.
I'm just saying, you know, the way the whole Colorado to MSU thing went down.
Unless they're going to the pros.
Yeah. The Colorado to MSU thing went down, where they said, do you want to come to Michigan State? And he said, no, I don't want to come to Michigan State. I'm in Boulder, Colorado. And they said, do you want to come to Michigan State and make twice as much as you're making now? Okay. That tells me that he is really committed to Michigan State. That he has always just wanted to be in East Lansing, Michigan. And that's where he wants to be his entire life. Because you know what Michigan State is that LSU isn't? Special. Michigan State is a special, special place. I mean, they have squirrels. They have special things at Michigan State.
This reverse psychology Jedi mind trick has no impact on the game, right? You do realize that what we say has no bearing on the outcome, right? None whatsoever.
I say respect Michigan State until we play, because we're undefeated. They're undefeated. We played basically the same schedule as each other right now. Let's talk we play.
Michigan State is a program that if you do well at that program, you go someplace else where you can do better.
Sure.
Because there are programs that are better than Michigan State, like LSU. And that's why Nick Saban left. That's why Mel Tucker will leave if they offer him the job.
I mean, for Mel Tucker, I think if they offer Mel Tucker, it's going to be a godfather offer. It's going to be an offer he can't refuse. You ask why Jim Harbaugh wouldn't go there? Well, one, last time I heard, there isn't any noise about Jim Harbaugh, A, having any interest, or LSU having any interest in Jim Harbaugh. You know, so let's
start
there.
That was a joke, Craig.
I know.
I'm repeating things from the Twitter threads that were adding Sam at MGoBlog, which is the official Twitter thread of MGO blog, apparently.
Well, at least this week they'll get mad for something I actually said. Like, I actually said some things this week, so.
Yeah, that's
maybe true. That'll get some traction, because I love it heading into game week. I love all the smoke. Let's go. We got a game to play. Michigan has a game to play before that, but I'm ready. I'm getting geared up already. It's going to be a fun week next week for sure, because there is no fan base more easily triggered than Michigan State fans. Trust me, and I'm sure you guys realize that too. Always a fun and festive occasion with my MGO blog brothers. You can find them at mgoblog.com. Of course, tomorrow, I want to remind you, we have an interview with the great-grandson of George Jewett. Going to play that in the 7 o'clock hour.
Michael Jewett.
Yeah, as Michigan is playing for Northwestern for the George Jewett Trophy now and forevermore. And great recognition of a figure not only significant to Michigan, Northwestern, and the Big Ten, just significant in American society, American sports for sure, but American society as well. Be sure to listen to that tomorrow. We got to get out of here. See you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Laughing, I thought it was funny. You know, they got excited. It's good. You know, sometimes you get your little brother excited when you're playing basketball and stuff. You let him get the lead, and then you just come back and take it back.
Do you think of Michigan State as your little brother?
Yep. So that's what they think. So that's what I think. What can I say? If they think that, I'm gonna think that. If they think we think that, then yeah, we think that.